welcome to another episode of
Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig.
My name's Craig.
And my name's Reza.
And we're going to help you grow your grammar, perfect your pronunciation, and
vocalize your vocabulary.
You remembered. Well done. In this episode, Reza and I will be speaking about alternative medicine. Medicine that is not generally accepted in traditional medicine, such as aromatherapy, acupuncture, etc. But before that, I just want to say hello to Salui, who is a lovely lady I met recently in Malaga at a podcasting conference. Now, Salui has two podcasts, and I'd like to recommend them to you. One is Sobre Perros Pod, which is celebrating their 100th episode, Sobre Perros. So congratulations, Sobre Perros, on 100 episodes of your podcast. And also, Salui has another podcast called Physioterapia.com. I'll put links to both of those podcasts if you'd like to listen to them at inglespodcast.com/126. Reza, we have a voice message from Pilar, who comes from Madrid, and here's Pilar.
Hi, Greg and Reza. This is Pilar from Madrid. All days I try to listen to you because your podcasts are helping to improve my English. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Pilar. Lovely to hear from you. Did you hear any mistakes there, Reza?
Well, that was very good, Pilar, but I did notice you said all days, I think, or something like that. But
all
that's
days,
wrong,
yeah.
Craig, isn't it? What should it be?
Every day. I listen to your podcast every day. Also, put every day at the end of the sentence. That's the most common place for those kind of expressions. Every week, every day, every month, all the time. Put them at the end of the phrase. So I listen to your podcasts all the time. But you did remember listen to. So that was fantastic. We hear so many mistakes with forgetting the preposition to after listen. Listen to a podcast.
And Craig, I would say the only way you can remember things like dependent prepositions, you know, preposition going with certain verbs, listen to, is by, for example, listening to podcasts a lot.
Yes.
That's how you'll remember. If you just write down in your notebook, your English notebook, oh, listen to, oh, good, now I'll remember that. No, you won't. You won't remember it if you don't listen to podcasts. You'll forget it. You need to listen to podcasts and other things.
Absolutely. We also have an email from Carlos, who is speaking about the first certificate exam. He says, I'm trying now to get the Cambridge first certificate. So I was looking for some audios in the internet in order to train my listening skills when I found your podcasts by chance. I'd like to tell you that not only are your podcasts really useful to improve my listening and grammar skills, but they are also very funny. Thank you, Carlos. I have a good time with them. Can we improve that a little, Reza? Mm. That expression, I have a good time with them, sounds
I really enjoy them,
yeah.
I would say.
I really enjoy them. Actually, I usually go running twice or three times a week, and I do that listening to your podcasts, your episodes. Sometimes you guys make me laugh, and people look at me running and laughing. They probably think that I am absolutely crazy. Well, we don't think so, Carlos. But has that ever happened to you, Reza, when you're reading on the train, on a bus, and you start laughing at something?
Yeah, it has occasionally happened to me. And even just walking down the street, and I suddenly remember something very funny that happened, and I start laughing. And the person walking the other way thinks you might be laughing at them. It's a bit embarrassing, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a really good author I like who writes books in English about travel called Bill Bryson.
Oh, yeah, me too.
And I think his books are very, very funny. Yeah. And I remember being on the train, on the bus, reading these books, and I just start laughing and I forget where I am. And I look up and there are people who are looking at me as if I'm absolutely crazy. So, Carlos, I totally understand where you're coming from. alternative medicine. We received an email from our friend Eva Garcia Romo, who says, Reza, would you like to read this one?
So she writes in her email, "Hello, Craig, it's me again. Sorry, but nowadays I teach English in a wellness clinic to therapists, personal trainers, and so on. And I really need your help to talk about vocabulary and expressions in this area." Well, you don't have to be sorry, Eva. We're happy to help. "Would it be possible to have something about this in a podcast? Thanks in advance for your always kind help. Best regards, Eva." Thanks, Eva.
Yeah, thanks for the suggestion. So we're going to accept your suggestion and talk about alternative medicine this episode. We have spoken about more traditional medicine and medical vocabulary in previous episodes, but alternative medicine is a separate kind of area, isn't it? I think it's looked at as a separate field.
We'll have to go gently here, Craig. We'll have to proceed with caution, because it so happens by chance that quite a few students of mine happen to be doctors of conventional medicine. Ooh, conventional medicine, the enemy. And they might be listening to this, and I know that they're very suspicious, shall we say, of alternative medicine. So let's be careful what we say. We don't want to seem to prefer either alternative or conventional medicine. We're just the messengers. We'll try to be careful about what we say.
As if we're speaking about politics, for example. Yeah, so let's be very unbiased here. Let me read a quick explanation, definition, summary of alternative medicine from Wikipedia. It says in Wikipedia, "Alternative medicine is any practice that is put forward as," which means presented, "as having the healing effects of medicine, but does not originate from evidence gathered using the scientific method," which means that the origins of this type of medicine doesn't necessarily come from scientific studies, from the science area. "Nor is it part of biomedicine, nor contradicted by scientific evidence or established science."
And Craig, what does "nor" mean?
Ni, I think, in Spanish. Ni, N-I.
Ni,
nor,
like,
N-O-R.
Like also not, like the negative of also not.
Exactly. Well, it's the negative of or, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And there are some examples of traditional medicine. Examples include new and traditional medicine practices such as homeopathy. I'm going to have problems with pronunciation of some of these words. Homeopathy, naturopathy. How would you say that?
I think it's naturopathy.
Naturopathy. Yeah, that sounds good.
A lot of these words, because they're not so common, you hear different versions of the pronunciation. People aren't quite sure how to pronounce them. A pronunciation maybe hasn't been established yet. You know?
The next one begins with a CH, but I know that it's a K sound. It's chiropractic. Because a chiropractor, I think, works on your back, doesn't he?
That's right. Yeah. He puts your bones in place. He or she puts your bones in place, yeah.
Energy medicine, I haven't heard of. Various forms of acupuncture. Acupressure. Traditional Chinese medicine. Cupping, C-U-P-P-I-N-G. That's with hot cups, isn't it, on your skin?
Well, yeah. Not like cups for a cup of tea, but they're usually glass or clay.
Yeah, like a cortado size cup. Yeah.
Yes, or possibly bigger. Apparently, it's very popular in China. My Chinese students are always talking about it. It's very popular there today.
I think it's supposed to draw the poison and the bad energy out of the body using heat. Ayurvedic? No, that's not right, is it?
Ayurvedic, isn't it?
Why don't you continue?
Okay. Okay, well, I'll go on if you like.
I'm having problems with this. Yeah.
No. I might be saying it wrong myself. I don't know. Ayurvedic medicine, which is kind of closely related to yoga. It's tied in with yoga. There's Ayurvedic yoga and there's Ayurvedic medicine, right? The next one I'm not very familiar with myself. Craig, what's Sekotsu?
Sekotsu is Japanese kind of bone setting that's connected and related to judo.
So it sounds like the Japanese version of chiropractic, putting your bones in place, yeah?
Exactly, yeah. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. And Reiki, I think you know more about that than I do, Reiki.
Not a lot, but someone once did Reiki on me, and I didn't think it would work, but I must say, I think it did.
What does it involve?
There are many things you can do in Reiki. They can put their hands on you or near you and transmit energy to help you in some way. Or in very advanced Reiki, they don't even have to be in the same room as you and they can send Reiki to you. And that's what happened to me. Someone sent me Reiki energy and I thought this isn't going to work, but it did. Or maybe it was just coincidence that when they said they sent it, I felt much better that day. Who knows? I'll never know if it really worked.
And how were you feeling? What was the problem that you had that you think Reiki might have helped you with?
I just had such a continuous lack of energy. Mm-hmm. And the person told me that they would send me energy, but they weren't going to tell me when they did it because that would be too easy. And I wouldn't believe them because I was a skeptic. That means I didn't want to believe. I said, okay. And then one day that week, I felt like a lot of energy had come my way. And so I said to them, okay, when did you supposedly send me this Reiki energy? And the time they said was exactly when the energy came to me.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Have you done it since or you just did it that once?
Just that once. But I must admit, I didn't expect it to work. But who knows? Maybe it was just coincidence that day I felt more energetic. I can't scientifically tell you that it worked.
That's the thing, isn't it, with these alternative medicines? You can't really prove it. You can say you felt better, but is it because of the medicine or is it because of that you wanted to feel better? And it's the placebo effect. We'll speak about that a little later. Next one we have on the list, Bach Flowers Remedies. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, been around for a long, long time. It's been around, I think, since possibly the late 19th century. Alternative medicine, yeah, but really, a couple of hundred years ago, it was common practice to use flowers and plants and herbs to treat conditions. And Bach Flower Remedies is just one particular branch of that school of thought. Flowers and plants probably do have certain chemicals and fragrances in them which affect your body.
That sounds very similar to the next one, which is aromatherapy. Is it connected?
Well, with Bach Flower Remedies, you can actually consume internally. You can drink remedies which are made from flowers. Whereas in aromatherapy, you don't. In aromatherapy, it's merely the smell.
And the oils that they put on your skin. Yeah.
So either they massage you or, as I've done, you put it in a bath and the certain smells and they affect your mood and well-being and perception and other things. I think it works. I think it does. I guess it's a bit like using incense sticks, which give an atmosphere to a room and, you know, affect the way you perceive things.
Interesting. Very interesting. The next one is Alexander technique, which I have heard of, posture, etc.
I've done it.
Me too. We'll go into that in a second. Crystal healing.
This is the one where I'm prepared to put my neck in the on the line.
What does that mean?
Who was it? Eva? Who wrote to us? For me, crystal healing is the closest one to a load of bull. I won't complete the word bull, but many people understand that bull means rubbish. I'm putting my neck in the line for this one.
What does put your neck on the line mean?
I'm going to take a risk. Maybe I'll be criticized. But for me, I'm going to say publicly, I find it very hard to believe that crystal healing works.
How would you describe it in one sentence?
Using rocks and stones to make you feel better. I find that a bit hard to believe. I'm very skeptical of that one. I don't completely rule it out. That means say, oh, it doesn't work, but I'd be surprised if it did. And I certainly wouldn't pay anybody any money for crystal healing. I'm sorry, Eva. What about you, Craig?
I don't know much about it. I think it's using precious stones and crystals, using the energy that's inside them or some special properties that they have to help you. No, I don't think that's
find that hard to believe.
I don't buy it, which means I don't accept it. I don't believe it. What's shiatsu?
I've actually done shiatsu. Strangely, I did shiatsu in Belfast, and it was performed by a Valencian practitioner, quite strangely, and she was very, very good at it. It's basically traditional Japanese massage.
It's massage, yeah?
But traditional Japanese style.
Were you impressed by it? Did it help?
Oh, yeah. Very much so.
Is it a hard, painful kind of massage?
More than traditional kind of Western or other types of massage. Yeah, they use quite a lot of force. And strangely, as far as I know, in traditional shiatsu, there's no contact with the skin.
So how do they massage you?
You wear a thin layer of clothing. They don't need to touch your skin.
Is that for modesty or for...
I don't know, but that's the tradition. Is skin contact is not necessary.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The next one I've heard of, but I'm not too... I think you know more about this than I do, reflexology.
I haven't tried that, but I have a feeling that it is probably a lot to it. To say that there's a lot to something or there's something to it means that it probably works or it's worth considering. I think it's the idea that your feet affect the health of your entire body. So if reflexology is all about your feet. There's diagrams where they divide your feet into areas, and by rubbing or putting pressure or maneuvering certain parts of your feet, it could affect your liver, your heart, your eyes, your bones. But using your feet, that's what it's all about.
Interesting. Okay. And chromotherapy or color therapy, I have no idea what that is.
I've vaguely heard of it, but common sense would tell me that it's using colors to affect your mood and your perspective and your outlook on life.
Well, I believe that because the reason that lots of fast food restaurants are in red and very bright colors is to make you the opposite of relaxed, to make you want to move and a bit tense so that you don't sit at the same table for a long time.
Yep, they have that study, don't they? The marketing guys from all those. So these are huge multinational global chains, and they believe in chromotherapy. Mm-hmm. They use it.
No, I think that's true. And blue, I think, is a very relaxing color. Some colors are more relaxing. Some colors have different effects on the eyes, on the brain. And finally, Christian faith healing, which is very popular in parts of America, I know.
What is that, Craig?
I think it's by community, getting in touch with God and using belief to make you better, or believing that God is acting through you. And it's very community-based, and you sing and you chant, and it's very popular on TV in America. That's obviously depending on what you believe in. But, you know, if it works, a lot of these things, if they work for you, maybe they're not bad. You know, if they work for you and they make you feel better, then I'm sure they're worth it. We don't have time to look very closely in depth about all of these different types of alternative medicines, but we are going to look at four in particular and then see if we believe or not, in our opinion, that they actually work. So we'll look at homeopathy, acupuncture, aromatherapy, and the Alexander technique. But first, some vocabulary. Reza, what we've already spoken about some areas of vocabulary and some words connected with this topic. Any more that you can think of?
Well, did we use the verb to treat?
I don't think so.
Well, treat's a very important word, not only for alternative medicine, but also for conventional, you know, hospitals and that type of thing. Conventional medicine. If you treat a patient, that means you're trying to help them.
Right. And be careful of the pronunciation, because the spelling is T-R-E-A-T, but the vowel sound is E. So it's treat, not triat. Treat. Mm. To treat someone for something. And the noun is treatment.
Craig, are you receiving any treatment at the moment?
I am. I'm being treated for... The preposition is for with treated. I'm being treated for high uric acid, which comes from eating too many rich foods, mm-hmm. probably too much alcohol in the past. I'm taking a conventional medical treatment of pills to try and reduce the level of uric acid in my body. And it seems to be working.
Yeah, it's perhaps strange terminology for Spanish listeners, but we normally say for hospitals and doctors and the things that we know in the West, we call that conventional medicine, not traditional medicine. Traditional means what it says, kind of from centuries ago, that is still practiced today, but maybe like in villages and that type of thing. But when you go to a hospital and that type of treatment, we call it conventional medicine. Although it's strange because one country's traditional medicine could be another country's alternative or another country's conventional. Let me give you an example. In the Chinese health service, they use acupuncture.
It's accepted as conventional in Chinese China. Medicine, in China.
In China, it's conventional. But in Europe, that's alternative. But it's not alternative for the Chinese. It's mainstream, which is the opposite of alternative. You can get it on the health service. Well, not the health service, but, you know, don't know if there is a health service in China. But from normal conventional doctors will also do acupuncture. And most people have tried it or believe in it, whereas here in the West, many people wouldn't try it. So conventional is a tricky term. It depends who, or alternative, who thinks it's conventional, who thinks it doesn't, you know.
So we could say that this medicine really, we could say that it's very culturally centric or culturally bound, depending on what country you're living in.
Yeah.
If medicine works for you because you think it would work for you, maybe there's no scientific basis for this medicine working, you could say it's a placebo, placebo. And placebos are often used in clinical trials when they're testing medicine to have something to measure against. So they'll give you a pill that does absolutely nothing. Maybe it's made of flour or something, or sugar, so that you think maybe you're taking medicine. So psychologically, maybe you will get better, but there's no actual medicine in the placebo.
So placebo treatment is used in both conventional and alternative medicine. You know, in hospitals, they give people placebo drugs.
Yeah.
Just like, for example, sometimes in homeopathy, they give people the placebo just to see what happens.
And it's really surprising how they sometimes work, because we think that we're taking something that will help us.
Yes, that will bring us to the area of mind over matter. If you think it's going to work, it works, even though there's no scientific reason. Mind over matter.
I don't mind, and the placebo doesn't matter. Let's look at a collocation. What collocates, what verb goes together with research? Do or make?
Do.
Do.
Yeah.
Do research. You can also say carry out research, the phrasal verb. To carry out research means to do research. Or you could say to conduct research.
Many conventional doctors complain that alternative medicine hasn't carried out enough research to prove that it's really effective. Whereas generally for conventional treatment, they're obliged to carry out or to conduct a lot of research before any new drug can be approved for sale. Mm-hmm. Whereas in alternative medicine, you can basically give anybody anything. There's no strict laws about it.
Exactly. Scientific studies, another collocation, science, la ciencia, and scientific is the adjective. So scientific studies.
We've got a word which might be tricky to spell for some people, pseudoscience. The first letter isn't S, it's P.
It's a silent P.
P-S-E-U-D-O, science, pseudoscience. So pseudo is a prefix which appears with other words. It means kind of false or not exactly what it seems, right? Or not 100% really authentic. So if it's pseudoscience, it's not real science, but it's kind of pretending, you know, or faking science.
Can you think of other words that begin with pseudo?
Pseudo-intellectual. Mm-hmm. Someone who pretends, oh, I'm intellectual, I know a lot, I know what I'm talking about. But if you really think about what they're saying, they don't actually know much.
Mm-hmm. A charlatan, C-H-A-R-L-A-T-A-N, a charlatan, someone who pretends to know something that he or she really doesn't know. Someone who fingir in Spanish, who pretends to know something that they don't.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they use pseudoscience to convince you, but it's not real science, for example. That would be a charlatan.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they use mind over matter, but they just hope that you convince yourself you'll get better, and you do, but they have no science to prove it.
We used that phrase, that expression before, mind over matter. How would you explain that?
Well, it's believing that your thoughts can, in themselves, produce physical effects, that you don't need any physical treatment or medication to have an effect. Just to want it, it will happen.
So if you focus on pain and you convince yourself it's not painful, then your mind is controlling the physical sensation of the pain.
Right.
Do you think that's possible?
I think it is. I think it's very hard, very difficult, but I do believe it's possible.
I do too. I think some people feel pain in different ways. Some people can suffer pain or accept pain easier than others. So I do think that there's something mental in the way you accept and deal with pain. Yeah, I absolutely believe that. But I agree, it's not easy.
I mean, most people would agree, wouldn't they? Most people would agree that if someone has a very serious illness, which could possibly even kill them, if they have a really positive attitude about getting better, their chances of getting better are much higher than someone who thinks, I'm going to die. I have no chance. I'll never get better. Just that simple attitude makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. That's partly mind over matter, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. To cash in on something, to cash in, the phrasal verb, to make money from a popular trend or fad. For example, the shopkeeper is cashing in on the popularity of crystal healing by starting to sell expensive healing crystals in his shop. So he's making money on people's need to buy crystals. He's cashing in on it.
He may not even believe in it himself. He just knows people will pay a lot of money for these things, so I'll sell them. In other words, he could be a charlatan. I reckon there's a lot of charlatans in the world of alternative medicine. I'm sure the majority are perfectly honest people, but I reckon there are some charlatans cashing in. What do you think, Craig?
Yeah, they're taking advantage. They're taking advantage of people's illnesses and cashing in on their needs.
I suppose, is it alternative medicine or alternative therapy, perhaps we could say, things like tarot card reading and that type of thing? I know it's a slightly different area, but it's kind of connected. For me, it's complete nonsense. I don't believe a word of it, and I don't mind going on record as saying that to the whole world. But plenty of people do.
Oh, yeah.
And people cash in, and everybody knows who's ever been in Spain. There are TV channels which show only tarot reading all day, and the first thing they want to know is your credit card number. Then they tell you what's going to happen to you. For me, if the first thing they want to know is your credit card number, they're charlatans, and I can't believe a word they say. That's my opinion.
I agree with you. Absolutely. A practitioner. What's a practitioner, Reza?
Well, I would say in the world of medicine, it's just someone who practices medicine. It could be a normal conventional doctor, a GP, for example, or a surgeon, or it could be an acupuncturist, could be an alternative medicine practitioner, someone who practices medicine.
And as Reza said earlier, conventional medicine, not alternative medicine, but conventional medicine is medicine that's generally accepted in the West as being the accepted way to treat sick people. For example, chemotherapy, if you're suffering from cancer, for example, is accepted practice now for treating cancer patients.
Whereas most alternative medicine practitioners would say, would not be keen on chemotherapy because it's, although it's a treatment, it's very destructive to your body at the same time. And generally alternative medicine likes to avoid aggressive treatments. They prefer to treat the body as a whole rather than, you know, just blast you with radiation and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Our final word or expression in vocabulary, new age. Now, I know new age in the music sense of new age music. How does that relate to medicine, do you think?
Well, for me, it's more than just medicine, though that's part of it. It's kind of the modern equivalent of the whole hippie or flower power movement. So in the 60s, there were the original hippies who kind of wanted an alternative way of life and, you know, to do things differently. And they've kind of disappeared mostly now. But there are now some people who have similar ideas. They don't like the conventional kind of way of looking at things. So post-hippie. Mm-hmm. We tend to call them new age, no? So the new age movement. So it includes things like, not supporting kind of fast food global outlets and, you know, wearing alternative clothes, not going to work in a suit and tie, but, you know, kind of wearing perhaps kind of ethnic style clothes, you know, even though you work in New York. Or, you know, going to, you know, your yoga and your aromatherapy every week, all that kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's that's very new age, kind of living, you could say, on the fringe of society, the fringe on the edge of accepted behavior and accepted society.
And new age music will be kind of music that is supposed to make you feel good and be positive and think about the environment and that type of thing. Do you like New Age music?
I do, yeah, I do. I think it's very relaxing. It's nice background music. I don't think I'd sit down and listen to it purposefully, but I like it in the background when I'm working or to create an atmosphere in the house. Yeah, it's very pleasant.
I remember the first time I ever saw a New Age group play live. It was in the late 1980s, and I was surrounded by New Age kind of people, and it was a group who were called Kangaroo Moon. And I bought their cassettes afterwards. Cassettes, I remember those cassettes of Kangaroo Moon Live. These Australian guys who'd come to a very kind of alternative place in England, and they had bongos and castanets and strange crystals and a full length didgeridoo. It was brilliant. A didgeridoo is like an Aboriginal native Australian thing. So New Age people like to incorporate kind of, although they're called New Age, they like to incorporate ancient traditions into the kind of modern lifestyle.
Going back to their roots.
Exactly.
Okay, let's look at our first area of alternative medicine, which is homeopathy. I won't read all of the definition that I've taken from Wikipedia, but I will put it in the show notes that you can find at inglespodcast.com/126. But just very quickly, what is homeopathy? I didn't know for sure, so I checked it. It's a natural form of medicine used by over 200 million people around the world to treat acute and chronic conditions. What's the difference between an acute condition and a chronic condition?
I think we mentioned this when we were talking about conventional medicine.
Yes,
it applies to that as well.
I remember.
So acute is something which arises, which comes up quickly and perhaps is maybe quite extreme, but hopefully you can treat it quickly and it will go away. Whereas something chronic is something that you've had for a long time and you're going to have it for a while and it might never go away if you're unlucky. That would be a chronic condition.
Okay. So homeopathy is based on the principle of like cures like. To cure is curar. So like cures like, which means a substance taken in small amounts will cure the same symptoms it causes if it were taken in large amounts. Mm-hmm. So I suppose you're taking small parts of something that then would help you get. Is that a good summary?
As far as I know, you're taking microscopic amounts, barely perceptible amounts, and then but your body, of course, knows you've taken them and reacts against it. The idea is your body reacts to what you've been given, and so it fights against it.
So then, does it create an immunity, an immune system against what's harming you, what's hurting you?
It kind of persuades your body that it needs to fight against it. Of course, if they give you too much of it, you'd just feel really bad, but they give you just enough to set off the immune reaction.
Mm-hmm. But are they safe to use, these medicines? Are they safe for the body?
I think so. If you get a practitioner who knows what they're doing. I must say, I tried homeopathy many years ago for something and it didn't work. But that doesn't mean I don't believe in it. I think in my case, I was just a bit unlucky. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure the homeopathic practitioner was very good that I had, but I know other people have had great success. And I've never really heard of anybody who's felt worse after doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it isn't just for herbal medicine, is it? Because I read that caffeine can be prescribed by homeopaths under the name coffea as treatment for insomnia. So they give you a little bit of caffeine to help you get to sleep. Is that right?
That would be the thinking behind it, yeah. Because your body then fights against this thing which is keeping it up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, if they give you too much caffeine, you would just stay up all night. The key is the tiny amount. It's got to be very small amounts.
I understand. Right. Yeah. So to summarize, Wikipedia says homeopathic preparations are not effective for treating any condition. Large-scale studies have found homeopathy to be no more effective than a placebo, suggesting that any positive feelings that follow treatment are only due to the placebo effect and normal recovery from illness. Now, those are not our words. Those are the words of Wikipedia.
Yeah.
What was your personal experience? Did it work for you?
No, but my personal opinion is that it probably can work for certain conditions, but not for others.
Right.
I have the feeling that no medicine, a conventional or any alternative therapy, can cure everything. But I'm sure if you combine things, you can. And for me, homeopathy didn't work, but for many of my friends, it has.
Mm-hmm. Before we move on to acupuncture, which is our next area, just a quick mention of a website I found while I was researching this called quackwatch.com.
Sounds funny.
Which is your guide to quackery, health fraud, and intelligent decisions. So it's a website that helps you educate you and help you to find medicine that maybe is good for the condition. If you have a condition and you're looking for medical help, quackery. How would you describe a quack in medicine? Quack is the noise a duck makes. Yeah. Quack quack quack.
Yes, that's
for
true.
A medicine.
But that's not the meaning here. A quack doctor or a quack practitioner is a charlatan, somebody who doesn't really know what they're doing, or in fact only wants your money, but they're trying to convince you that they can really help you. That's a quack. So quackery is the practice of false therapy.
Mm-hmm. Charlatans. Acupuncture. What is acupuncture? Reza, would you like to read the definition of acupuncture from Wikipedia?
Their definition says, acupuncture is a form of alternative medicine and a key component of traditional Chinese medicine, involving thin needles being inserted into the body. Traditional Chinese medicine theory and practice are not based upon scientific knowledge, and acupuncture is commonly described as pseudoscience. There is a diverse range of acupuncture theories involving different philosophies. Techniques vary depending on the country. It is most often used for pain relief, though it is also used for a wide range of other conditions. It is generally only used in combination with other forms of treatment.
Well, as you were saying, in China, I suppose that's part of the general medical care that your family doctor will give you. So he'll give you things to help your illness and acupuncture as a complementary treatment. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good expression. Yes, complementary medicine. Yes, that's added to conventional medicine. So acupuncture is a great complementary therapy, isn't it?
So needle in Spanish is aguja, N-E-E-D-L-E-S, needle, needles, agujas. And apparently the conclusions of many trials and systematic reviews of acupuncture are largely inconsistent. And here's a quotation. An overview of medical reviews found that acupuncture is not effective for a wide range of conditions. It may be effective for only chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting, nausea and vomiting after operations, and some kinds of headaches. And it may alleviate or help certain types of pain. So all of these modal verbs, like it may be effective, it may alleviate pain, it may not. So there's no proof, there's no consistency in the results of testing acupuncture. Now, I had acupuncture recently to help with an attack of uric acid, and the pain did go away. It got better. But I was also taking conventional medicine. So did it go away from the conventional medicine, or did it go away and get better because of the acupuncture? I don't know. It wasn't painful. The needles going into the skin wasn't really painful, but it wasn't comfortable. It wasn't anything that I would want to repeat. So I have no conclusions. I really can't say if it worked or not.
Well, in my own personal experience, it's been quite a few years, but acupuncture did work for me. For certainly when I was lacking energy and I wanted a boost of energy, it gave me a lot of energy. Before I tried it, I was skeptical. That means I didn't think it would work, but I thought, I've got nothing to lose, I'll try it. But I was surprised. I felt very, very energized after the first session. And so I did a couple more times, and it gave me a lot of energy.
I've got two questions for you. How long did the treatment go on for? You said three sessions. Was that like 3 weeks?
Yeah, something like that. Three sessions of 3 weeks. And I could have gone on longer, but I just didn't have enough money at that time to keep on doing it. Quite expensive. But each session was successful. It gave me a lot of energy, a lot of energy.
And which part of the body did they stick the needles?
Oh, all over.
All over?
Yeah, from one in my stomach, between my belly button, you know, and my waist.
What's your belly button?
Umbligo. Just kind of under there, which I was a bit worried about. There, my hands, in between my fingers. That's not very nice there.
Yeah, that hurts a bit.
On my head. One of my head, not to treat the head. Where they stick the needle isn't necessarily where they're treating. So mine was about tiredness and energy, and they put it in my head, but they weren't trying to treat my head. Mm-hmm. Or if they want to treat your liver, sometimes they put one in your foot. It's strange. The body part doesn't correlate to where they put the needle in. But I'm actually a believer in acupuncture, mm-hmm, from my own personal experience. But I'm sure it doesn't work for everything, but for some things, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm pleased it helped you, but I'm still skeptical. I'm not convinced.
What about acupressure, which is basically acupuncture but without the needles? So instead of putting a needle in, they find the same point, but they just put pressure with their finger on the point. Would you go for that rather than the needles?
I would try most things because I can't really give an opinion if I haven't tried something. But I'm not sure I'm not convinced about the energy lines in the body and the relationship between pressure and alleviation of pain. So I'm a skeptic. I'm skeptical. But if something works for other people, then great. Fantastic. Why not? Before we continue with the podcast, Reza and I would like to mention and speak about our sponsor, Italki. Italki is a website where you can go to find a teacher that will help you improve your English. You study one-to-one with a teacher that you choose on their website, And that's very convenient if you have problems of time, if you're working or you're very busy and you can only study at 11 o'clock in the evening, for example. You can study at a time that's convenient to you and a price that you can afford. And if you would like to find out more information about our sponsor, iTalki, they are offering 100 free credits, which is basically a free lesson with any teacher you choose. So to find out more, go to inglespodcast.com/italki. And Reza and I would like to thank italki for sponsoring Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. What's the next one, Reza?
Aromatherapy, which I've tried, and I think there is a lot of evidence to support it. It's the practice of using natural oils extracted from flowers or bark, that's corteza, stems, tallos, leaves, hojas, roots, raíces, or other parts of a plant to enhance psychological and physical well-being.
What does enhance mean?
To make better or stronger. The inhaled aroma from these, what they call essential oils, is widely believed to stimulate brain function. Essential oils can also be absorbed through the skin, where they travel through the bloodstream, in other words, through massage or rubbing it on, and can promote whole body healing. That's the definition from the aromatherapy.com website.
So inhale is you breathe in the aroma or the smell from these oils.
Yeah, you can put a few drops in a bath, or you can burn them as incense or in special candles or in water, and the smells get released into the room.
And you've tried it, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think? What were your conclusions?
Yeah, they make you feel good. It's probably quite hard to know exactly the effect they're going to have, but, you know, even if they don't do everything you'd like, it's just nice to have nice smells, nice aromas in your house. That surely is a good thing. I mean, people kind of do it in a conventional way as well by putting in their, in Spain, do they have Airwick? Or maybe they call it Airwick, something like that. Those things that you plug into your wall and turn them on. And
yeah, we use them here. Yeah.
That's kind of the conventional version. And you want the room to smell better. I'm not keen on those. I would far rather use something natural. Incense sticks, which is kind of a type of aromatherapy, or essential oils. Well, why not? People have been doing it for centuries. Mm-hmm. They do it in churches, if you think about it. In conventional Christian churches, they burn incense. It's the idea that it produces a good atmosphere, it gets rid of bad smells, and it's generally a very kind of godly thing to do.
And, of course, very common in Buddhism. When you go to temples, there are always incense sticks burning. What was the feeling you had after the treatment of aromatherapy? How did you feel?
Just really relaxed and chilled out and just not as stressed as before.
According to Wikipedia, there is no good medical evidence that aromatherapy can either prevent or cure any disease, but it might help improve general well-being. There's that modal verb again, it might. So everything that we're telling you here, you have to take with a pinch of salt.
What do you mean by that? Take it with a pinch of salt.
You have to take it, you have to balance it with, you have to be careful, you have to balance it with knowledge that you have and not take it as something definite that's for sure. I think they have a similar expression in Spanish. Is it puñada de sal?
Is that what they say?
I think so.
Maybe you could be right. I didn't know that expression in Spanish.
Okay. I think so. But if I'm wrong, please correct me.
Craig, we've one more to talk about. What can you tell us about the Alexander technique?
The Alexander technique is something I've always wanted to try because I really like the idea of it and its connection to mindfulness, but I haven't tried it yet. It was developed a long time ago, over 100 years ago in the 1890s, and this technique is named after Frederick Matthias Alexander. It deals with, or it uses, a process that develops the ability to realign your posture and avoid unnecessary muscular and mental tension. Because as we get older, our bodies maybe go into a particular shape due to stress, maybe the way we're sitting every day, our lifestyles, and how we're living from day to day. And he said, this guy Alexander, said that we should constantly be conscious and aware of our posture, how we're standing, how we're sitting, and how we're moving. This idea of self-awareness, which is conciencia de sí mismo. Sometimes we need to correct our posture when we're standing or when we're sitting to make sure our body weight is evenly distributed. Make sure our head is correctly placed, it's straight, and that we're walking correctly. Alexander said that those who habitually misuse their muscles could not trust their feelings when carrying out activities or responding to situations emotionally. That idea of sensory appreciation. What do you think of that?
When I was about 20 years old, I tried the Alexander technique.
Oh, really?
Yep. And I think that, yeah, there's a lot of good to be said about it.
When you say you tried it, did you do a course? Did you have a friend that showed it to you?
I went to a series of sessions kind of once or twice a week for about a month or so. And yeah, it did seem to help. But I think it's a very difficult thing to do well and do properly. It takes months and months and months, if not years, of training to be able to do it effectively, naturally. Because here's the thing for me. One of the downsides about the Alexander technique.
What's the downside?
The downside, a drawback, a disadvantage.
Negative thing.
Is that you can become over-obsessed with your posture. Now, it's good to make people aware, conscious, aware of their posture. But I found that me and many of the other people who attended them just became too obsessed, you know, and every minute of the day is like, am I sitting right? And that in itself caused stress because you were stressed out that you might not be sitting right. Whereas before I hadn't been stressed out about it. So as I say, it probably takes months and months, if not years, for it to become natural. And then I imagine it's useful. But I noticed that the people who were doing it with me, they often walked about with the head held up very high, and mm-hmm. you could tell that they were obsessing about it, and it was kind of overtaking their lives. And yeah. That kind of defeats the object. It goes against what you're supposed to get out of it. Instead of being really natural, you become unnaturally obsessed with being straight.
So it's sort of it's counterproductive.
Exactly.
It's trying to improve your body posture, but it's making you obsessed and more stressed about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When the idea is that it should relax you. You know, mm-hmm. because you have good posture, but you get too stressed about your posture to be relaxed. You know,
I can see how that might be a problem. But I do like the idea of mindfulness, of sitting down and enjoying the taste of a coffee and not drinking the coffee and thinking about something else, of enjoying your food and concentrating when you're eating on what you're eating. And not just going through the motions every day without appreciating what's happening. But that's very, very hard to do, like mm-hmm. you were saying. It's a constant practice to develop the habit.
Well, Craig, do you like occasionally slouching? Do you like to slouch from time to time?
We better explain slouch, just to lay back and not yeah. hold my body in any yeah. particular way.
Just be really, really relaxed, and, you know, let your body kind of take whatever position it wants.
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah. absolutely. That, but
Alexander technique doesn't like that. You see, they don't like slouches.
I think slouching's okay. This is my opinion. Slouching's okay. Mm-hmm. To be a couch potato, to just lay on the sofa, but you must be aware that you're doing it. So right. I'm going to slouch for half an hour. And then when you get up again, you go back to walking correctly or sitting straight.
Alexander technique, you see, doesn't like slouching.
Okay. You it's see, very strict, isn't yeah. it?
Oh, that's you know, so it's not all about the relaxation. It's a bit more complicated than that.
That's not for me.
You can't just slouch. They don't like slouchers.
I like a good slouch. So the effectiveness, this is from Wikipedia, the effectiveness of the Alexander technique is uncertain. because of insufficient evidence. There is evidence suggesting the Xander technique is helpful for long-term back pain. So if you've got a very, very bad back, maybe this will help you. Maybe this will help you. Long-term neck pain, cuello, and may help people to cope with, which means to live comfortably with or to accept Parkinson's disease. But little evidence that it helps any other medical conditions. So if you've got Parkinson's, if you've got a bad neck pain, if you've got back pain, maybe you could try this to see if it helps. And there's more information about the Xander technique on our website at inglespodcast.com/126. And now it's your turn to practice your English. Do you have a question for us or an idea for a future episode? Thank you very much, Eva, for sending us your question on alternative medicine. And if you have a question like Eva, please send it to us by voice message at speakpipe.com/inglespodcast, or send us an email with a comment or question to me, Craig, at inglespodcast.com.
Or to me at belfastreza@gmail.com.
And if you would like more detailed show notes for our episodes, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/inglespodcast. And we'd like to thank our 11 lovely sponsors, who are Reza,
Lara, Zara, Mamen, Juan, Sara, Corey Finneran from IBMB Podcast, Jorge, Raúl, Rafael, Daniel, Manuel, Carlos, and Manuel.
Well done. Thank you very much. Thank you very, very much. On next week's episode, we'll be speaking about Spanish words that we need in English, but that we don't really have. So please join us next week. Thank you for listening. And until next week, it's goodbye from Reza.
And it's live long and prosper from Craig.
That's from Star Trek. The music in this episode is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later. Hello and welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of
Aprender con Resi Craig.
Aprender qué?
Hombre, ¿qué aprendemos?
Aprender qué, me olvido. ¿Qué aprendemos? Ah, claro. Aprender griego con Resi.
Bit rusty there, mate.
My goodness, sorry, I want to slip.
Take two.